How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX, a few minutes past 2 p.m. Razor's Edge?
Oh yeah, I've got one for you. So last week, there were those horrible floods in Texas, and you know, we got into a discussion about, like, who's to blame, what happened, what went wrong. Well, they're releasing some more details about this Camp Mystic where all those little girls died. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the director of this camp, his name was Dick Eastland. He was 70 years old. He did end up drowning while trying to rescue some of the youngest girls at this camp. But he was alerted about an hour before they actually started moving girls out of cabins. He was alerted that a flood was coming and it was going to be severe. This person chose not to go wake up any counselors or get the ball moving on that. Instead, they chose to talk over walkie-talkies with their family members, most of which were people who worked at the camp, just trying to assess the situation and decide if they were going to wake everyone up and start moving them out. It turns out that these camp counselors were not allowed to have their cell phones in the cabin, which if I'm a parent, that's a huge problem for me that my child is sleeping in the middle of nowhere with an adult that doesn't have a way of contacting anyone else. So they weren't getting any alerts from the National Weather Service or anything. So all of this just happened quickly, but they did have about an hour to get the ball rolling and chose not to. They waited until it was like heavy downpours of rain and it was like, oh yeah, we should definitely be moving here. So, I mean, it just makes you really sad that someone could be in charge of this many people in an area where like this is a possibility and they just made the wrong choice and that wrong choice led to little girls being dead.
Yeah, I'm sure this guy was a wonderful guy. I'm sure he did his best, but he made a giant mistake and people died because of his mistake.
Yeah.
I mean.
And it just got me to thinking about, you know, I went to like camps and stuff as a kid and being in situations where it's like, yeah, you can't have your phone. We're basically in control right now. You're not allowed to have contact with the outside world. I get that to an extent. You want to like control what's going on in the camp. You don't want the counselors like texting and meeting up at night or something like that. I understand the inclination to take away forms of communication. But whenever something like this happens and you go, well, why didn't they didn't have their phones? They didn't see that there was a huge storm coming in. They couldn't even make a decision for themselves. Mm. It's just one of those things that it's just very, very unfortunate. And I hope if there are other camps in the country who have the exact same protocols in place, I hope this helps them to reevaluate those protocols.
Yeah, I agree.
What else can we talk about during Razor's Edge? I just wanted to bring that up because we got into that conversation last week and it's like, let's not place blame. But it's like everyone deserves to know what happened here.
In most situations, there is blame to be placed.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a fact. When I was an attorney, I remember being surprised at that in every case, whether it was my client or someone else, when something goes bad, there are those things, something just falls from the sky, but typically someone's done something wrong.
One last thing. It's unclear whether or not anyone at Camp Mystic ever called 911. The local fire chief told a news outlet he never received a call from help from the camp. And camp staff did not officially start contacting parents until later that morning. The first communication from the camp to most camp parents came at about 11:30 in the morning. This all played out about 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah. So, I'm guessing a lot of those girls were just swept out of their beds. It's just horrific.
Very, very terrible. I know some of them were like up in trees for hours waiting for rescue. Mm-hmm. Sad situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a lot of things we can talk about.
Okay.
Let's just kind of go down the list. I saw someone post about this. They actually took the post down because it was so controversial, but I think that's kind of what makes it perfect for the DGS. So this man made a post on Reddit and was like, look, I just received about $150,000 inheritance from my grandfather. this is the money he had saved for his entire life. And he wanted to give it to me, like, in case I wanted to buy a house or get my life started. So I've just received this inheritance. This man is engaged to a woman whose father has cancer and needs a $50,000 surgery. So she came to her fiance and asked for the money. And he was like, I don't think my grandpa would want the money to go to. I think my grandpa wanted this money to be for me. So he basically said no. And the comments were, everyone was like, yeah, I mean, I guess you're in the right. It's your money. You can do whatever you want. But I feel like your relationship is basically over because your wife wants to save her dad. And you just told her, no, I need to make a down payment on a house instead. What do you think? What do you think this guy should have done?
Yeah, that's a ballsy ask. I mean, I don't know the nature of their relationship. You know, if they're engaged, they're obviously very, very close. But engaged is not married.
That's true.
And so I would think if your spouse asked that, it's probably much easier to say yes. I probably would have said yes, just looking for the credit. but I understand that's probably the most money this guy's ever had, and a third of it being gone. And if you give away a third of it, why, you know, then they're going to want more. So
what do you think, Andrew?
I think that the right thing to do is probably to pay for the surgery.
Although, is he not? Are they going to let him die? I mean,
that's the thing.
A lot of surgeries don't get paid for.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. A lot of people in the comments, too, were saying, like, yeah, the real jerk in this situation is the United States healthcare system.
Well, it's not wrong. Like, if it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, we'll give him the surgery, but he's going to owe, you know, a whole bunch of money that he'll have to pay back piecemeal over the next. Yeah, well, so does everybody else. That's fine. But if it's one of those things that's like, we are not giving the surgery unless it is cash on the table.
Yeah, I've never really heard of that. It could very well be a thing. But
I've heard,
really
of
heard
of
it.
I've heard of it with stuff that wasn't like life-saving surgeries, but I have heard people say that that's a thing. Like if insurance won't cover it at all, like some doctors will be like, I need some amount of money up front at least.
Do you feel this? I don't mean this to be humorous. I had a friend who this week told me that her dog is in dire need of a $5,000 test. And she doesn't have $5,000 and was trying to work with the vet. And the vet was just like, this is what I do for a living. It's $5,000. You pay me. I don't think the vet was mean about it. But do you feel the same way that healthcare in general should be covered?
It's tricky because I know just knowing a little bit about the vet industry like I do, I know that that is how it works. And the nature of... I do think there's a difference between human health care and dogs. Like, if it's like, I can't afford for the surgery for my dog and I have to put it down, I feel very differently about grandpa. You know what I mean? We got to put grandpa down because we can't afford his liver surgery. I guess I don't really care if the veterinarians change their ways. But I do think that everyone should be allowed to have a life-saving surgery if it's like kind of the final option.
What would you be willing to do to pay for it? And I don't expect you to have like a plan, but just how much would you give up to have universal health care?
What do you mean by give up?
Well, I mean, you'd have to pay more in taxes or someone would, because it's going to be very expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have absolutely no problem paying more in taxes. I think that's a pretty common refrain of people like myself who just have immense amounts of medical bills that they'll never be able to dig their way out of. It's sort of like, I'm paying anyway. So it's like if you take those away and instead I'm paying it in taxes, it's only a positive for me because then I can also feel good about other people sharing the same benefits.
Yeah, the thing with the vet, I definitely feel for this person who needs the test for their dog. But I don't think that it is fair to the veterinarian to be like, yeah, but in this case, can't you work it out with me? Because it's like, then they have to do that for everyone at that point. Like, when do you as the professional start making these value judgments as far as like, well, this dog is worth saving and worth me not getting paid and all this. Like,
and the billing,
it's very difficult to sort all that out.
There's a lot of not paying going on. And I was bad at it. But when I had my own law firm, I would always take a retainer up front. And while I wouldn't say it to the clients, it was typically true. This is all you're ever going to pay me. Mm-hmm. Like, so many clients just would never pay again.
And a lot of that goes on insurance. That's part of the big reason why there's this difference between, like, veterinary health and human health, is that human health is sort of subsidized by this insurance industry where, like, if I get a surgery, my health insurance will pay for a portion of it, even if I'm not able to pay the 20 grand or whatever that's left over. They are still getting made somewhat whole by the insurance company, and the pet industry doesn't really have standardized insurance in that way. There are pet insurance companies, but it's not one of those things that's like everybody has pet insurance and it's a very important thing, and I think it's, you know, like a law to have pet insurance or whatever. That just doesn't exist. So if they say that the surgery costs $5,000 for your dog, that's because that's how much that surgery costs. You know what I mean? Like, that's the price of it. It's not like where it's like, yeah, if you get liver surgery, it's 150 grand, but your insurance is going to pay 130 of that.
Okay, speaking of people not paying, like you just said, Dave, that reminds me of this story I saw. So there's a landlord in Washington, D.C. He's seeking to evict a Republican congressman over unpaid rent at his D.C. apartment. The rep's name is Corey Mills. He's from Florida, and he's accused of failing to pay $85,000 in rent between March and July. Representative Mills is saying, hey, I've been trying to pay this, but the apartment complex has a faulty payment system online. I can't get the things to go through. It's
Liar.
Not working, so it's not really my fault. Whether or not this guy is lying, whether or not he's a Democrat or Republican, I don't really care. To me, the story is that monthly rent for this property, according to the court filing, is over $20,000. This is not this person's primary residence. This is where he lives when he's in D.C.
And he makes $180,000.
Yes, it's like, what's going on with our lawmakers? And like this whole system we have set up to where it's like, yeah, that's my second place. Rent's 20 grand a month. I might pay it. I might not. That's, to me, that's the real story, is that these people are going to D.C., having multiple homes that are super expensive, and they can just handle it like it's nothing, where the average American is struggling to pay for their mortgage or their rent on their one property that they live in.
Yeah, if you go to Congress, you are rich. You will become rich.
Oh,
it's just you have
disgusting.
To really be stupid to not become rich. Yeah, and I can pick up on that, having lied in my life. Like, no, it's not 4 months of they have a faulty online payment system.
Yeah,
no.
I mean, if that happened to me at my apartment now, I would be doing I wouldn't just go like, nope, it doesn't work, and move on with my day. It's like, now I have to make sure rent is paid so I can continue living, so I don't get evicted. Like, just the fact that you're like, I guess I don't have to pay because it doesn't work. That reveals something about your mindset. We've got a thing about the whole
red eye. Sweet, sweet Connie. And turn her
back, DGS 222. Ricky Horton's going to join us at 2:30. Stanley Tucci took my corn trick.
Your corn trick?
Yeah, what? You know how I butter corn?
No.
Oh, yes, you do. I've talked about this for 25 years.
I probably stole it, too, and that's why I'm pretending to not
know what it is.
You butter
the bread. You put the corn in the bread.
Oh, you sheet the corn with the bread.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now he's doing it, and everyone's like, genius.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
He's like, Mama Italia, and you're like, oh, come on now.
Been doing that since I was in short pants. I know what that means.
How much bread is he really eating anyway?
Right.
Any of these actors.
Right. No kidding.
They're all liars.
Yeah, he's probably using the corn to butter the bread, or bread to butter the corn or whatever, and then he's throwing it out. Whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm trying to say.
Have you guys seen these Narcan vending machines?
No.
So they're going up across St. Louis, and they're just a vending machine. Looks like you get a Snickers bar, but you get life-saving Narcan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become controversial because, well, let's just give up let's just go through the inner city and give everyone fentanyl and just let's not even try to get people off drugs. And
well, isn't Narcan itself a dose of?
I don't know.
Like narcotics itself?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
I'm looking at...
I have no problem with it. I think it's something that... I think that that's something that should be included in, like, probably... Maybe not, like, your first aid kit in your house or whatever, because mm-hmm. there's no real danger of somebody coming over to your house and overdosing. But, I mean, if you're, like, you know... I don't know, if you're in your car or if you're going out in public or if you're going to, like, if you go to a lot of festivals or whatever. Mm. I don't think Narcan is, like, if you can get a hold of some, it's not an unreasonable thing to have with you.
Better to have it than
not. Yeah, I mean, I don't think the solution is, like, I don't want people to do drugs, so when they're ODing, they should just die. Like, that's really that mindset. If you're like, we shouldn't be giving them the Narcan, they should just die immediately. Like, no, I mean, I think having access to this is ultimately a good thing. Looking at this article from KMOV... So it looks like St. Louis County is actually rolling this out. And it says that Narcan is a medication that can reverse the effects of an opioid overdose, but I'm not sure if it's an actual dose of the
I don't think it is.
Well.
Reading a little bit about it here on Google, I don't think that is how it works. I guess it counteracts the opioid receptors in the brain to like make you not feel those effects anymore.
Burger King has debuted a limited edition burger in Japan, Rage, called the Baby Body Burger.
Oh, is it a sumo burger?
Yes. It has five patties, and it's a collab with the Japanese Sumo Association, which is holding a tournament this month, which you know about.
Yeah, it's the Nagoya tournament. It's going on right now. Very exciting. I have looked into the Baby Body Burger because Kurt and I were like, well, maybe we could like get on the Burger King app and try to customize our own. It's a Whopper, basically, mm-hmm. but it has like five patties, two slices of cheese, bacon, the special sauce. I don't think American Burger King lets you order five patties on one burger.
Really? I wouldn't think they'd care at all.
I was not able to figure that out on the app. If there's a way of doing it, please let me know. I mean, I think it looks fun. I like all things sumo, so I'd want to try it. They also, did you see their pickleball burger that they did last month? So this was also in Japan. It was like three Whopper patties on a rice bun, but it was just like not even like a rice. It was a rice patty, basically, just like molded rice for the top and bottom bun, pickles, and hamburger meat. I thought it sounded delicious, but for the most part, the internet reacted in like absolute horror.
Is the baby body thing just a reference to sumo wrestlers look like giant babies?
I mean, I would assume, baby body. That's the thing is like, there's a couple wrestlers where you're like, you kind of just look like a giant baby. Like, not every wrestler by any means, but if I had to guess, it's just a reference to that. There's this one wrestler named Tommy Fuji. You should Google him. He is adorable. Like, he's just very cute, does a lot of endorsements in Japan. That's who I think of when you say the baby body burger.
If you've been wondering what Elon Musk has been doing with his time, Tesla recently expanded the service area of its robo-taxi in Austin, and the map looks like a penis. So he put it out there and was giggling. So he's having a good time.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Glad everyone can find brightness in their day wherever they can, you know?
Wouldn't that be amazing? Like, I've been in a really bad mood for about a week now. And although I have things to be thankful for and happy about, I'm not the world's richest man. So wouldn't that be amazing if you get in a fight with your best friend, Donald Trump, then you wake up the next day and you realize you have $400 billion and you're like, I'm okay. Hey, look, that looks like a penis.
It's going to be all right.
It's going to be all right.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX.
Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good, buddy. I understand you're taking a little drive to enjoy your time off.
Just got off the golf course at Whitmore, played with my buddies there, and had a good time. The guy behind me, in our group got a hole in one today. I've never actually seen one, so that was kind of cool.
That's very cool.
But yes, we're driving to Kansas City to see a horse show with my wife's going to be at.
That's wonderful.
Very cool.
Tell her good luck.
I will definitely tell her that.
So I'm not sure whether it's just that we're the best friends in the world or what, but I'm kind of hating the All-Star thing. Like last night I tuned in for the Home Run Derby and to each their own, but I didn't finish it. It was just like I just didn't think it was done very well. And
I feel like I've ruined you on that because, you know, my feelings about the Home Run Derby.
Yeah.
I mean, when people ask me about it, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say, oh, it's going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, because it's slightly better than a slam dunk competition in basketball, both of which I would, you know, I'd rather clip my fingernails than to watch either one of them. I could care less about them. They have no interest to me, and I feel like I've ruined you, Dave. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll go. The ship's going down with both of us. So
that's good.
So I know that during spring training and in the minors, they've been doing the Robo Ump challenges. My understanding is they're going to do that for the game tonight. In general, what's your feeling about the Robo Umps?
I actually like it, and I would, you know, it sounds like, you know, so I don't like full robo umps. I like the challenge system. The challenge system is, you know, when you get three challenges a game at the ball, you know, and you can tap your hat, and there's actually umpires making the calls every time, but they can get verified or not. Now, the full robo ump, where every single call is called by an umpire, I don't like that at all. I like human elements in baseball games. I think the less we humanize the game, the worse off. But I do like the challenge system, because then at least you have a chance to argue some and change some important pitches.
So Wheeler's out today, so I'll try to handle this myself. And I saw a really interesting debate conversation. I didn't realize that there were players who were invited to be All-Stars who said respectfully, thank you, but no. A couple of the Phillies pitchers said no. And so they went out and got Mizorowski from the Brewers. And they had some not flattering things to say. One said that it was a joke. The other said that MLB is turning into the Savannah Bananas, and just kind of wanted to get your read on that first.
Yeah, well, so it's not a new thing. I mean, I go back, I remember the great Gary Templeton line when he was a Cardinal in the, I guess, early 80s. His line was, you know, when the voting was going out, he said, if I ain't starting, I ain't departing. That's his famous line. Hmm. So he got actually picked to go on the team, but they didn't get picked to start, so he refused to go to the All-Star game. And so people have had the right to do that. Now, some guys have it in their contract or have had it in their contract where that's actually a bonus, which complicates it even more. But it is, you know, it does seem to be that there are monetary reasons, there's profile, there's marketing reasons instead of baseball reasons that are around the All-Star game. And again, it's an exhibition anyway, so who cares in some ways, except the players care. So if you're a veteran pitcher, you're Sonny Gray, you're having a good year, and a guy has pitched five games and he makes the All-Star team and you don't, I think you have a gripe. I really do. And not just Sonny Gray, but several other guys would have a gripe about Mizorowski, because yes, he's been great for five games, but it's five games.
Yeah, it's only five games more than I pitch in the big leagues. So
that's right.
One of the sports talking heads I was listening to have this conversation, and you know their name. I don't, but you would. It's a regular, you know, national guy. He said, be careful what you say about the Savannah Bananas, because from where I'm sitting, this is him talking, they're doing more for the sport of baseball than the MLB is right now for younger generations and bringing them to the game.
I think they are doing a value. I think it's the, I mean, so I grew up absolutely loving the Harlem Globetrotters, and I got to watch them play once at the local college in Poughkeepsie, New York. I went and watched them. I was on the phone. Meadowlark Lemon stepped on my foot, for goodness sakes. I'll never forget it. He was doing his half-court shot. I got good seats. I must have known somebody. I was only, 12 or 14. But he was going to set up for that shot, and he stepped on my foot, and then he made it. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty darn cool. But I love basketball. I love basketball, but I think the Globetrotters, Curly Neal, you know, those. I mean, that was fun stuff. Now, we knew it wasn't basketball. We knew the Globetrotters couldn't beat the Celtics or the Knicks or the Lakers. That's not what that is. But it's just a fun added thing. Now, I don't know why I don't feel the same way about the Home Run Derby. I just don't. But the Savannah Bananas, I think, is entertainment. Think of it as like going to a play, not going to a baseball game, but it's a play about baseball. And I think that it's good for the game.
So kind of sticking with this this thought pattern, I don't know enough to talk to you and Wheels and Bernie and guys like that about the X's and O's of when the deadline comes. Are we buyers or are we sellers?
Yeah.
But
in
the vein of Savannah Bananas, I think we need some stars. I think whether we buy or sell or both, I think that the moves need to be impressive. And it's sort of like Scalia saying, I don't know how to define porn, but I know it when I see it. I'll know impressive when I see it. And I just feel like the St. Louis Cardinals are missing out the last couple of years on impressive.
Yeah, well, I'm a little less on the impressive and the star thing as most people are, because I look at it this way. You know, Willie McGee wasn't a star until we won, and then he was one because he got good at the right time, and Tommy Herbie became a star. And so, you know, Cal Raleigh's a star right now, and last year I couldn't find three people in St. Louis who've ever heard of him, goodness sakes. But he's not. And so the point is, if you win, you're a star. If the team plays well, you become stars. And so I feel like the best thing the Cardinals can do is win. And, you know, you can win with nine really good players. They don't have to all be all-stars. You can still win with them. Now, is it better to marquee and sell tickets, to see, the Mark McGwire show? I think the Mark McGwire show in 1998 wasn't as much fun to me personally because the team wasn't winning. The Cardinals knew that. The Cardinals knew that just because you have one great player, if you don't win, it still kind of thuds at the end, and I think it did. And I mean, good for Mark McGwire doing what he did, but I'd rather win, frankly. And so whatever you takes to win. In the draft, I think the Cardinals got some pitchers that will help them win eventually, and I'm happy about that.
Liam Doyle, our number five pick, from all the guys I know what they're talking about, say that they're really surprised he was still available at number five. They're all really excited.
Yeah, yeah.
They think that he could be a Cardinal by 2026, perhaps.
It's possible. I think what I like most about him is they comped him to Al Roboski. That was the coolest thing because they showed him kind of screaming at the other team's coach, and then they showed a video of Al Roboski in the back of the mound talking to the baseball. And yeah, I mean, I do like that. I think that this is a fiery dude, left-handed, throws hard. So again, I think they took some good picks as far as big arms. They're not going to help you tomorrow. Like you said, maybe 26, maybe 27. But, eventually you got to get more guys like that in your pipeline. And I think, again, several good picks, not just him.
So, Ricky, however it happens, are you a fan of seeing J.J. Weatherholt with the team this year?
Not necessarily. I don't think it would hurt. I think the fans would get excited about him. But I think, honestly, I don't need to see him because I saw him in spring training a lot, and I saw that he's got a lot of potential. He's gonna be a good player. I would be much more interested in making sure that he developed on the right scale and in the right timing. And that's for smarter people than me to figure out what that is. That's the whole thing about minor league development, is getting a guy ready. Because if you bring up a guy when he's got one more thing to learn and he hasn't learned it yet, then he gets exploited at the big league level. Now you got all the questions you got to deal with, and it becomes problematic. So I want to make sure he's finished and ready to go by the time we see him.
And listening to both Gas House Gang and the Redbird Rush Hour the other day, it left me with the impression that as sad as it would be to see Helsley go, because he's been a whole lot of fun, that it's almost a foregone conclusion given the way it lines up contractually and such.
Well, it would be sad for the reasons that you say. I love a lot Ryan Helsley. I think he's a great kid, and he is a kid to me. And he's a good teammate. All of that, and he's just obviously a great talent. But if his talent brings the Cardinals other great talent, and he can go to that place, wherever that place is, and get his big payday, which he's not gotten yet, so it'd be good for him. And so that's why, sometimes it just has to happen the way that the economics of the game works. And clearly, clearly that's a possibility. I don't know if they'll do it or not, but it's a possibility.
So I haven't heard a lot of talk about Miles Michaelis and Fetty since their last two starts, especially Miles was much better than expected. Do you think it bought him a little time?
Yeah, I think, yes. And when you talk about time, I mean, the time is, you know, is drawing to a close. I mean, you're paying both Fetty and Miles a lot of money, and if you're not going to get something for them, you know, you're just adding more money to this team. And so if you can kind of tough it out, I think that's why they're deciding to do that. Now, you can argue that's not the right thing to do, but I think that's why they're doing it. Miles was really good his last time out. Said he found something, so we'll see. Fetty was marginally better and serviceable, but let's hope he keeps figuring things out.
All right, buddy. You guys have a great week, and we'll see you back here on Friday.
All good. Great to chat with you. Thanks.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS coming in at 3. We have the new city controller. Donna Behringer is going to join us at 4 p.m. We have Ian Mackey and David Barklage for the think tank. Lots to talk about there. You guys familiar with what a wow skill is?
No.
How do I
Sorry,
know?
I faded out so
yeah, that was,
not
that
smoothly.
Was
it was
quite
like,
abrupt.
Like he fell off the stage.
A wow skill is primarily a Gen Z thing, but it's taking over other generations. And it is a strange, impressive skill that they believe every well-rounded person needs. So you need to not only have a good job and be a good person, but you need to have a skill. Would you like to hear a few of them?
Yes, please.
Things that would qualify as a wow skill.
Okay.
Fire eating.
Ah, man.
Speed reading.
Okay.
Solving a Rubik's Cube.
Okay.
Moonwalking.
Sure.
Juggling.
Okay.
Splitting an apple in half with your bare hands. What?
So you need that in order to be a well-rounded person?
Yeah, to be someone who's attractive to other people.
You need to be able to moonwalk.
Balloon animals, lock picking, magic, or origami.
Okay.
What's the closest you have?
Maybe speed reading. I can read pretty fast. But a lot of times I'm just skimming and then I read it wrong. So I guess I'm not very good at it.
Hard to pull out like a Rubik's Cube. Like the speed reading thing, you're like, watch.
Yeah.
You could be faking.
The fire eating, that seems like, you know, not that many people have that skill. And I always wonder about the people who eat fire. Like, are they burning themselves as they train to do it?
You'd think so. Until you get
You'd
good at it.
You'd be getting some nasty burns.
Yeah, you would think so.
Dangerous.
Disney adults are getting their own dating app. It's called Single Riders. Gee.
I mean, it sounds like a good idea to me. You want to find other like-minded people? Like, yeah, get on the Disney adult app if you're a Disney adult.
Come on, judge them with me. It feels so good to judge them.
But yeah, wouldn't you rather, like, everybody just go to their apps where they're going to be able to find their tribe rather than like, I've been on like 3 dates with this guy and it turns out he's a Disney adult. He's been hiding it this whole time. If you're leading with that, I think that's a good thing. Just being honest and upfront.
Would you hide it if you were a Disney adult?
I don't think I would think there was anything wrong with it. So no, I don't think I would hide it.
It's fun to be a Disney adult.
Is it
look at him over there.
I'm not necessarily one. I don't know. I might be closer to one than to not being one.
And you're not embarrassed at all?
Nah. I mean, you know, it's whatever. Look, the parks are fun, all right?
Like, yeah, I love Disney.
Yeah, I'm not like, I guess closer to like a Disney parks adult because it's like super fun to go to the parks and ride the rides and stuff. I don't necessarily, like, I haven't seen all
You're not
the,
drilling
like,
down deep on Pluto and...
Yeah, I'm not, like, super... I haven't seen, like, the Pixar movie that's out now, and I don't really care about it or have any interest in it.
Oh, you know what Disney movie I watched a couple of weeks ago for the first time?
Hmm.
The original Lilo and Stitch.
Spectacular
like when,
movie.
When the remake, the reboot, the IRL version came out, I was like, you know, I've never really seen the first one. I think I watched it at like a sleepover or something. I didn't remember anything about it. What a fantastic movie. It was very, very cute.
Total blast. The new one, as I understand, is not.
They changed a lot of things about the plot that makes the movie special, yeah. Apparently. So.
Yeah. Like, I know, I'm not going to get into what the changes are because it's like, you know, who cares? But like, it kind of defeats the entire purpose of like the original message of the movie, yeah. The important message, to the point where you're like, why did you even make it then?
Isn't it weird how you go through stages of your life? Like, I could not be less interested in Lilo and Stitch. But if I had grandkids, I'd be right back in that life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like so much, such a big core of my life was spent caring about things like that because of the kids, mm-hmm. and going to every movie I could possibly find and buying toys and playing the games and all that. And then one day you just stop. And you couldn't care less.
Well, because it would be kind of weird if you were like...
Like a Disney adult.
Well, you know, if Phoebe was like completely over all of this and you were like, I can't wait for the new Pixar film. That would be a little odd.
Mm-hmm.
Couple fun facts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No one knows the origin of the name 7-Up, which was created in 1920.
No one knows?
They've no one knows.
They've done all the research and they can't find a single reference.
So it just... poofed into existence.
Someone named it that for some reason.
Poofed.
In the 1930s, a brand of toilet paper called Northern Bath Tissue. I know Northern. Why they gotta act like that? No one's ever seen that. Marketed itself with the slogan 100% splinter free because that was not a guarantee with toilet paper back in the day.
Bro.
You could get splinters.
I'm so glad I live now, you know. I don't think I could have survived at any other point in history.
7-Up was created by Charles Leaper Grigg, who launched his St. Louis-based company, the Howdy Corporation, in 1920. And he came up with a formula for a lemon-lime soft drink.
Yeah, but
he originally named it the Bib Label Lithiated Lemon-Lime Soda.
It's not a great one.
And,
Yeah, but what does 7-Up mean?
He didn't know.
I don't know. Ask Bib Label Charles Leaper Grigg or whatever.
There's a trend on TikTok where women are using Sharpie permanent markers as lip liners.
That sounds like a silly idea.
Is it?
I mean, you don't have to reapply it.
Yeah, I'm not a lip liner person, so I guess I don't know what I'm talking about. But putting Sharpie on your face doesn't seem like a good idea to me. But what I mean, again, what do I know? You know, who am I to judge any of these ladies?
A 40-year-old man in Florida was arrested Friday after stealing a very long list of adult toys from Walmart. Who knew that they had that? And a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Well, I mean, you can't leave Walmart without getting your candies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did not know they sold sex toys at Walmart. That is interesting.
Running out with your big pile of sex toys and being like, don't mind if I do.
Yeah, it's in the impulse buy section as I'm walking out.
No, I don't want it now, but I know myself. I know at 10 o'clock tonight I'm going to be wanting those Reese's.
Did you hear the wow skills thing? Did you have any wow skills?
I did not hear the wow skills. I'm sorry. I had to run out and greet our guests.
Rubik's Cube and origami and like, do you have anything like that that's impressive?
I can walk really slowly.
Yeah, probably
yeah.
not.
I can trip over hammocks and make a sound so loud that people think a meteor has crashed to the earth.
Getting closer.
My dad bought my nieces like an origami book. And it has step-by-step directions, and it's made for children. Mm-hmm. And they're like, here, Rachel, do this with us. And I'm like, sure. It is so very difficult.
Yeah, it's origami.
Very hard. Like, even the kids' version is tough. But I would like to practice and get better.
Did they do it?
No.
Like, could they manage it?
No. Blair just wanted me to make paper airplanes after a certain point. And I obliged. I was not going to be able to make that lion or whatever we were trying to do.
I've never made a paper airplane.
What?
I mean, like, I've tried, but I've never made
a successful one?
Yeah, I've never made one that could fly.
DGS paper airplane contest.
Yeah, that's not going to go well. You know Wheeler's good at it, right?
Well, yeah, that's probably all he's probably majored in that.
His life is prank-based, so I imagine he's good at making all weird paper things.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.